I'm trying to come to grips with the fact that I mostly can handle my life. And I don't know, I've been in a mode for a while where I feel like I'm doing too much, or I'm overwhelmed, or how can I possibly handle all the things that I'm handling? But like, I kind of have them handled. I kind of have things under control. Like it's okay. And I think I can both overestimate how much I have to do and underestimate my own capacity. And it's fine. I think it's all fine. I think, you know, at least at the moment, or at least for now, like it's fine. You know, I've got this, and that's not something that I've felt a lot recently, or maybe a lot in my life. And so it's a big, I don't know, it's a big change to try to turn the corner in accepting that, like, I don't, you know, I have a life that I have the tools to live the life that I live. And that's, I don't know. I'm struggling to come to grips with things being okay or something. Or good. Where do I what?
Do you question the word, you know, I have this under control in some way, and is there a way in which having that have to be the case, is there a way in which that perhaps produces an anxiety that isn't the kind of anxiety that helps with equilibrium, but in fact creates a barrier to the divine life?
I mean, of course, I'm real hesitant to use the vernacular under control, because I don't know. It came to mind somehow recently, maybe speaking with your son, actually, about riding a wave, you know, like somehow you're up on the wave, but it's not under control. Like, you wouldn't call it that. But anyway, like, you roughly, in so much as you have the tools or the capacity, in so much as I have the tools or the capacity to deal with this thing, I'm dealing with this thing, which is, you know, all the bunch of things that I've bitten off in my life to chew on.
You're staying on the surfboard, as wobbly as it might be, yet here we are surfing away.
Right,
And it's only recent that I felt this kind of okay, like I'm kind of on the surfboard, and now anything might occur.
Yeah.
And then the issue of surrender and deeper levels of what perhaps, you know, what is true control is probably found in the heart of some kind of surrender.
Right.
A kind of lasting control is a complete giving up of control, and then it does seem for that those souls have an endless amount of energy, and seem to be breathing a different atmosphere from a person like myself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be shocking for you to hear that, you know, of course, I do prefer the term lasting control to true control, but yes, it you know, yeah, I,
oh,
yeah, it does
I
seem like
a, both of those interchangeably, eternality and truth seem to be somewhat interchangeable to me, but
yeah, right. And I somehow have this, like, I don't know. Yeah, this hesitance around using those together, but I do feel that.
Yeah.
Lasting control, or at least staying up on the wave for a while, or like things are okay now. Also, like, I don't. Also, because even it's hard to imagine that it could stay that way, or somehow accepting that things probably aren't going to stay that way, or can't stay that way, or never do seem to stay that way, is part of what allows me a sort of peace right now in accepting the, you know, again, like, control is such a weird word, and it's a funny thing, right? Because we, you know, I wanted to talk about something that we framed in a way by using the word control that is exactly what it doesn't feel like, and now we're going to talk about it through that lens, which is like, almost feels like a boo-boo, but I'm into it. You know, like,
it can easily move on.
No, it's great.
I think it already has on some level.
I don't know. I want to talk about that. I think it's good.
I'm just doing a Ben Kramerism in the sense of listening carefully to your first sentence and then asking a question about a word in that sentence.
Wonderful.
I really like that. If there's a way to do that, like in our daily lives with others, without it, people are scared of that debate. But anyway, please continue.
I'm into it, at least at the moment. I'm sure.
Well, sure,
you know.
You are. Sure, you are.
Yeah. I appreciate the challenge. I don't know if you. Someone can go back and listen to the recording. I don't know if you used. Maybe I used the word control, but boy, I mean, again, it's like.
But it was off the cuff. We were just describing quite easily. But I'm
control feels wrong though.
A lot with what you're feeling about. I'm working a lot. I mean, every human being who listens to this, if anyone listens to it, every human being who lives is a huge.
Do you think a surfer feels like they're in control? Do you think they tell themselves that? I don't know. I haven't surfed much. But once or twice, I even stood on the board. Once or twice. And, but other people are on boards for, the whole duration of a wave, which isn't that long, but seems like a long time compared to my time on a wave. Do you think they ever think to themselves, like, I have this under control?
I know that when I'm bebopping and some kind of solo or some kind of interplay might be happening where you feel like you're on a little bit of a magic carpet ride while still trying to watch technique and ability, so that there's some sort of amalgamation of control and surrender. There's some sort of cocktail that whereby there is a sense in that, I mean, the surfer's done a lot to get to that point where she's lost in her wave. It's almost... I think there's a little bit in a master.
Yeah, right. I was going to use the word mastery. I'm so absolutely tickled that you said that.
That kind of like side glanced at them. There's something in mastery that.
Yeah.
And I don't know about it.
Yeah,
but it does seem like that.
No, but you. We have. Like, listen, we all have. None of us want to oversell ourselves in admitting our mastery at any given thing, but like we all have a certain sort of mastery. You know, there's whatever the 10,000 hour rule. What's his name? Who wrote all the books? Whose name I can't think of. That's overly popular and sort of
Deepak.
Pop. Much more. You know, the two people that listen to the podcast are yelling at the the pod right now. But Malcolm Gladwell. This idea that these masters become mastery when you spend 10,000 hours at a thing. That he like tells this story about like the Beatles were in Hamburg, playing, yes.
5 nights a week,
8 hour sets. Yeah. Right. 8 hour sets.
Night in and night
day.
Out.
Yeah. Totally.
Night in and night out. 8 AM.
Yeah. And they came out of Hamburg and they were just monsters. They just racked up these 10,000 hours. Bill Gates had this weird thing where like there were like two or three mainframe computers in the United States, and one was at the University of Michigan. And he had somehow arranged a certain number. There was this open space in the middle of the night where he could go practice on this mainframe that no one else had access to. When he was 13, he would wake up in the middle of the night and go, and he just racked up these hours that no one else could rack up. And so that's like, mastery, we call it Xinjiang, right, in the Tibetan tradition. But we're all mastery at like at least being ourselves. We rack up 10,000 hours of I racked up 10,000 hours of being Ben very early in my life, as did everyone else.
Retrospectively. Yeah, and mastery around like I mean, it's crazy because I wish it was as simple as doing 10,000 hours.
Right.
It's doing 10,000 hours intelligently. So I've done thousands of hours of dishwashing and floor cleaning, and I maybe have learned in the last 2 years how to just wash dishes, and not have any resistance at all, not have any resistance to an unclean room and just clean it without resistance. This is a great, this is some kind of great summit that I've reached in the householder's life for me. It's like a summit that I try to keep. What's it called? What do we just call it? A lasting kind of attitude towards.
Yeah.
Not so much a control, but a lasting awareness of, like, now you're going to have to do dishes your whole life, like twice a day. And it's such a perfect opportunity to connect an awareness, a worldview.
Well, and as soon as I say control and you say control back to me and I push back against it and you say, maybe we don't want to call it control, then I start wanting to call it control again. But because
you want to control the thing. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, maybe
a little bit.
But there's something about that. I think there's something about the fleeting nature of that control that is like the surfer knows that the wave is running out. And you know that the tune is running out, or like, right. Even I, like, if you're playing with somebody, I heard, a few moments of your friend Jade playing a live show yesterday on the internet. And,
Yeah,
it was amazing. And there were these moments where everyone was like tightly together, and then moments where like people were loose for a second and then they like came together again.
And that's Jade's thing, man.
Yeah. Right.
You know, free. Yeah.
Oh, it
yeah.
was like a mess for a second, but then suddenly everything was clearly tight again for a second. And then, again, so now I'm pushing back against lasting, and if I had said it, I'd be pushing back. And if you say it, I'm pushing back. And because this is just,
oh, I guess I mean reliable, you know, I'm a householder with luck, maybe 25 years left. And what do you do when you get in the shower? You do it once a day. Mm-hmm. What's the practice? Mm-hmm. What are you doing with the soap? How do you use a lot? What's the water? These are the things. 10,000 hours. Uh-huh. All these, every single thing we do, we're like, we do the same thing every day.
Right.
When you get in a car, do you always drive the speed limit or under it? Yes, since Lent in 2015, I drive the speed limit or 5 minutes under. You know, like just these little weird and you just these little strange little vows that just that lead up to a patience.
Yeah.
And like a deep, not even patience. Like just to where it doesn't feel like I'm moving from. Now I'm doing this. And now I'm a yoga teacher. Because, you know, now I'm a jazz musician. Now I'm mirroring some. Now I'm cleaning the floor. Now I'm a tiler. Now I'm a, but rather a sort of bringing some unitive awareness to all the, it's almost as if I would have to accept my life fully. Like, Kevin, this is your life. Mm-hmm. You live here. Mm-hmm. This is the house you take.
That's
and
right.
There's some part of me that never shows up. It's like,
yes.
Are you think you should, but then how could there be resistance if you've shown up?
Oh, I love
this
it.
Is your life.
Yeah, totally. But there's also, there's also dullness, right? And I think there's also dullness. And I think one of the classic examples
I don't know
of
what
dullness,
you're talking about.
Right? Well, it's funny. You know, our friend Kevin Wilcox wrote me yesterday and said, you told me years ago that that at a certain point you experience subtle dullness in meditation, that it hurts to rouse yourself from it. And I didn't believe you, but now I do. And nothing further. He didn't ask any questions or follow up. He just left that comment and, you know, And yeah, but like driving in on, you know, driving, I think almost to me, like the quintessential example, it's funny because, I had a therapist who was talking about, hypnosis. And he was saying, it's like when you're tuned into something you're really good at, you know, and you just let go of everything. Or like when you're driving somewhere in the car and you're not sure how you got to where you're going. And
I was about to say that. That is not a thing we want.
No,
actually,
those are opposites, right? Those two.
Yeah, just dreadful.
Yeah, right. But he's defining something in a different way. I'm like, okay, well, that's interesting that you picked those two, because to me, those are two very different states. Which isn't to say we couldn't like draw a line around them and call them, you know, hypnosis or Schasblatt, or make up whatever word and say that that's a thing. But it doesn't mean that I want Schasblatt A and Schasblatt B. I want Schasblatt B and Schasblatt A is a problem, or vice versa.
Right.
So how do you like, and that's in my mind, when you use the word show up or the term show up, you know, there's a different thing to drive the speed limit or 5 miles under the speed limit and get where you're going in that way. And it's a different thing to show up and be aware, not because you're, you know, necessarily you're missing the special experience of driving itself, though maybe you are, but because you're missing the special experience of showing up.
And just a special experience of, oh gosh, all that comes with those little tweaks mm-hmm. to our lives. Mm-hmm. Like, I noticed the people who, I don't rush anymore. And I noticed that the people who rush are always late. They're always late everywhere, always late to everything. And I used to be that way, always late, always like. And I noticed that when you drive under the speed limit, you get places earlier. And then
that
you,
can't be true.
And I don't know that how that be. Works.
I'm sure that can't be right.
It's really beautiful how that works. Like, because of the shift in a relationship to time and not feeling this palm at the base of my spine pushing me through my day, and that push that I feel at my spine, at the base of it pushing me like I got a hand, just go, now do this, now do this, now do this, now do this, now do this. If that hand is actually resistance, that is my own inner resistance to the nuts and bolts, the whole essence of my life, to what I've been given to do. And it's, oh, it's a big, I mean, anything, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I have resistance to putting on pillowcases over pillows. I mean, come on, man. I mean, I, you know, like, dude, you're going to always have to put on pillowcases over pillows as long as you sleep with a pillow. If you become a sadhu who puts your head on a rock, well, then maybe you have to dust off a rock. I don't know. But it's funny. And I just see it. And, you know, you grow up in a milieu. You grow up maybe in a rat race society that believes in things. Even though people were trying to pull us out of the 50s, you grow up in an industrial military complex stamped with this aggression towards objects and the kind of reduction of objects to simply their use, which is not necessarily unholy, but if it's simply use, then it's, and you're pushed and you feel, for me to give up that impatience before we got on a plane to go somewhere with my dad, and the impatience that my dad had before he had, you know, some sort of inebriant in him, and bless your heart, Dad. And I just, the whole, and my mom's resistance to cooking, and oh my God, I got a kid, I always got to cook and clean. And just, you just pick up like, oh, that's the stuff I don't want to do. Mm-hmm. All that stuff is the stuff I don't, because my parents don't want to do it. How do I know? Well, because they just resist it. There's not this like, my God, we have food. It just came from a store, and I just put it in this thing, and then it came, and we're all sitting together at the table. Yay! I mean, of course, nights like that happened, but I think I was at the beginning of the stages of the unraveling of the family, and the unraveling, and it ties so deeply into actually what we're talking about right now for me.
It's interesting if the activity, you know, I woke up this morning, I'm gonna bring the kid to school, I'm gonna get the kid ready, I'm gonna get my ass ready, I'm gonna get the kid's ass ready, I'm gonna bring the kid to school, try to be reassuring, I'm gonna try and get him to school in a way that's civilized and on time and feels smooth to him, and then I'm gonna get to the coffee shop. I was afraid I left my power cord at the studio, so I'm gonna try and catch Kendra on the phone so that I can make sure that it's here. And then, but then I didn't have my wallet. So then I'm going to try and catch her. And then maybe I can get this other message out in time so that I could be here on time so that I could do the, I got a list of things, and then I've got to teach yoga, and hopefully I'll be ready to do that on time, do a good job at that, you know, and then I've got a, you know, a meeting shortly after that. And then this other task I have to do. And then, so if I'm setting out, like, what am I setting out to do when I get in the morning? Am I setting out to do this list of things? What would happen, right? If I set out in the morning, like, today I'm setting out to be accepting of what I have to do today. Like, what if that were my task today? That were the task that I was like, okay, I'm going to get up in the morning. I'm going to see if I can accept whatever I know damn well I have to do without necessarily having to review it in my mind. Because I already know what I have
to do. I will occupy myself with burdens and hold them in grace. I will occupy myself with tasks attending to grace.
Right. Yeah, you switched that from burdens to tasks, right?
Whoa. Yeah. I wanted both. Okay. I want both big time. Yeah. Crosses and just simply neutralities.
Does it stay? And this is a question, right? Does it stay that way? Like when we bear it in that way, does it continue to be called a cross?
No way, Jose. No, when we surrender to the burden, it is obvious, then it's not a burden.
Right.
No.
Right.
No, yeah, I don't know if I can be definitive about that because it's not a state I can maintain. but it feels very
probably right. I think you mean probably not Jose.
Yeah, probably not Jose.
Yeah. No, I don't know. But I could do it, you know. I do know what I have to do today without reviewing it too sturdily, but
too what?
Too sturdily, too thoroughly without.
Oh yeah.
But there's too this, and again, it's not like control is such a weird word. Walking is such a funny activity. It is it's a controlled forward fall. I mean, that's sort of how we walk. We just like keep catching ourselves and rolling
to
the next.
I've heard it described that way.
Yeah. And, and that it seems like falling down a tunnel and batting yourself off the walls of the tunnel so that you never quite hit the walls of the tunnel, or like somehow managing this life feels to me when it's going well. Frankly, like a controlled fall, like I'm somehow just bouncing from one thing to the next thing and somehow, or like, you know, keeping a beach ball in the air, it'll always come back down. And that, you know, and if I'm frustrated that I have to hit the beach ball again to keep it in the air, you know, this game's not going to be fun because it's going to keep coming down.
Yeah, and it seems some of the crucial points or the crux or the crucible nature of it happens at points of transition. And I've noted, like, what is it to flow evenly from, I don't know, but boxing the day, this is the thing. So I have a list right today, and yet I don't know, not moving from singularity to singularity or specificity, so that there's more of a, but just attending to God's grace in gratitude creates this mental equilibrium and this very gentle joy in my heart. If I just raise it to God in gratitude, it is a complete reset or something. Like I'm just like, I'm here. I have a chance to like make this being a cup of coffee. I made some oatmeal for Asha and I finally got it down, you know, to like, I hardly do anything for anybody, but damn, when I do, just feeling this like, this gratitude, and it can really, I don't know. There is a giving up of control when one is occupying oneself with grace. That almost like, is it the main occupation of a being who has a reflective capacity? Mm-hmm. I don't know what beings have consciousness or not. Maybe rocks do for you folks out there, and trees or for like for, whales. I don't know.
Maybe rocks do for you trees out there.
For you trees out there. I, you know, God bless. But it seems that the position I'm in is this having this mind. And what is it to engage itself in so that it can be not even most functional, but most alive, I guess. And it seems to me, this kind of
That's
awareness.
That's showing up, right? I mean, alive is this showing up. I mean, in my mind, this, and it's funny because there are things that I do to keep me engaged or something. Like I when I do the dishes, when I do whatever, like I have systems. I like systems. I'm going to do them in a certain order. And that's going to allow things to stack in a certain way. And I can do it.
Oh, I don't do that.
Out of, I can do it out of resistance or out of, you know, an enjoyment of perfecting a thing. I can do it out of resistance or out of mastery. Like it depends, you know, sometimes it's because this will be the shortest way to do the thing and I don't want to do the thing. Or sometimes it's like, I'm enjoying refining the thing. And outwardly, the actions can look very much the same. But boy, they are not inwardly.
And then at some point, there's not even, I think, perhaps, enjoyment of the refining of it.
Why? I like that.
Because there's potentially... Yeah, but maybe... there's potentially some deeper joy where it isn't there is a beauty in the refining of the system. Mm-hmm. There's also a beauty in riding the wave and not thinking about the refinement of your surfing at all.
I don't know how like slow and thoughtful it is, but I think like refining ourselves, like this is the boy, this is a challenge of a spiritual path. You know, I'm mm-hmm. Oh yeah, you know, watching your son, you know, who came to visit me this weekend is just wonderful. And I just like, it was interesting watching, mm-hmm. it'll be interesting for my son, you know, like watching someone mm-hmm. who grows up around a spirit of self-refinement, because you and I, the way that we probably grew up around that some, but also didn't some, and also the way we were introduced to it. And I think that we've seen the struggle in a spiritual life of the beauty and the horror of self-critique. And then what that, my goodness, to start with that as early as you can start with that, you know, there are beautiful things about it. There are problematic things about it, right? It's so easy when you're challenging yourself, when you want to be of greater and greater service, when you find that fulfilling, to watch the unfolding of something being refined in, you know, want the crucible of service or the playground of service. And that's, but the process is often one of critique and discovery of things that you would want to heal or you would want to be different. And it's very hard to learn to see those things and be happy that you're someone who sees those things, as opposed to see those things and be unhappy with what you've seen. Because we all have burrs to be polished from our surface. That doesn't make you special. The fact that you have these imperfections that can always be polished and never be perfected is not unique about you. Yours are unique, but the fact that you have them is not unique about you. Noticing them and taking joy in showing up to polish oneself, that's special. That's not everybody is doing that. Not everybody is into it. And it's cool that you are. That's cool. I think it's neat. Right. I marvel in that about you.
Right. And then part of the refinement being for me, beloved God, do the work in me, because I tell you what, when I try to refine myself, I often don't know where to turn or what to do.
Yeah.
That basic self-distrust is the essence of refinement. And that is an irony. There is something ironic
in
the process of living the divine life, because as soon, yes, I'm working on refinement. Why? Because simply of the pleasure it gives you? Oh, my man. That's not a deep enough telos. That's not a heavy enough goal.
Why?
Sorry, Kev.
Why?
Oh,
how much, it depends on how much pleasure it gives
that's
you.
What I'm, I guess that's what I'm going to talk about. I mean, guess that's where we're... Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, is it, you know, I think there are levels of pleasure that...
Yeah, no. To what end? And
yeah.
To what end?
Right.
To what end? Is it an end in itself? I don't think so. I don't find that it is, but perhaps it is an end in itself.
The process or the pleasure?
The pleasure.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just not sure.
And making it such is, I think, one of the deeper veils between myself and ultimate reality that has to go.
I don't know, because I'm not sure that pleasure, like in a, and I think that we're not clearly defining that term, but I don't think that the highest pleasure can be divorced from love. And I think that
I didn't say that.
No, I don't think I'm this is me saying this. I'm not saying that said that. I'm offering that I think that when I think of what is most pleasurable to me, right? I think of those moments in my life where I have felt, you know, surrounded, enveloped, submerged in love. And that.
So refinement of a dishwashing system in the name of love.
Yeah, I, you know, it's pretty rare that I think about it in that way.
I mean, it's difficult. How do we, what do we, so like actually seriously.
Yeah,
like,
sure. Of course, actually seriously.
So what now, Ben?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just like, gosh, you know, and I tell you what, man, these 5 years of the apprenticeship of my son working with me, under me, where I put two other men over him and just watch from the side and practice the refinement of being a bump on the log, of literally begging for blessings, quietly watching my son go through breaks, like where I had to hold him and he shook, like a very, very terrifying mental states that he has had to, that beautiful boy has had to shoulder and live through. And the desire to offer solutions and the buttoning of my lips and not offering solutions, not offering a fix, not offering a way to refine, but a simple holding in grace and hope and in prayer. And I do think that there's a self-reliance in certain spiritual paths and an excessive self-reflectiveness that leads to a sad, anxious, solipsistic state, frankly. And this process of refinement, perhaps half of it is this conscious effort, which as soon as we do it, we give it to God. Give it away. Like, don't perseverate too much now. Okay, you just refine this and it's beautiful. And that refinement, that very ability to do that and see another new, smooth way to do it came from God. Give it to God. Sweep clean your heart and get ready for the next refinement. But to hold on to it and then to perseverate upon it and to mull it over. No, you got it. Your fingers do this now on the thing, and now the Bach sounds like this, and the bebop sound, you know, whatever it is. It's this constant sweeping clean of the heart. And then with someone like your son, to back off and not say something when they're, oh, but if you could do this, oh, sweetie, don't do, oh, boy.
Well, and it's going to be interesting, you know, also, right, your daughter, obviously, right, also, but in such a different way, right? There's this, it seems like there's
very
this
different.
Extraordinary, and I say from a distance, you know, but I mean this, but it seems like this fierce independence you know, your son feels very open to that help. And
now.
Yeah, right. Yeah, at least now. Right now, yeah.
Because, by thank you, because of this work we did. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't give him advice in the last 2 years.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah, that's so hard. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
That's what I've been saying.
Yeah.
It is, Ben.
Yeah.
The holding of the tongue.
Yeah.
And just even the most gentle,
Do you feel like that's an investment you're making with your daughter? Now I know she's off to school.
No, because it's such a different terrain. Uh-huh. And with my daughter, it's like if we can even have a conversation and she's opening up, and her whole thing is that fierce independence is hiding. She's a deep insecurity, which she can't yet quite look at. But as mom and dad, we hold her in her bright confidence, which is also hiding a profound, you know, brokenness and fear. But so it's a mixed bag. And with her, it's more a matter of, and also I don't know how it is for Aurora, but she's my daughter, and it's so different than, there's something different about the dad-daughter relationship than the father-son, my son being a male. It just, it's less fraught between my daughter and I than it is between my son and I.
Yeah.
It's just, it's more.
I always worried about that, you know, also in having a son and seeing that there's this, there's something about the intimacy of how much he feels like me, like that there's this other being in the world that's as much as a being in this world could be another being, but also kind of sort of still be me.
That's great. Uh-huh. That's very well said.
That, uh-huh. Like, yeah. I'm in this constant danger of being hard on him the way that I'm only allowed to be hard on me, which maybe I shouldn't be allowed to be, but I do take that liberty with me that is very much open to question, and I am trying to question in my life.
Oh, but, don't we, though? Yeah, I mean, I took and that I liberty far too many times with my son, and that's honestly what the refinement of fathering was for me. Uh-huh. Was pick very carefully, my man, when you want to say words of guidance. Very careful now.
Oh, Kevin, my son today. I dropped him off at school today, and he started a new school, and and they've been meeting him. There was a friend of a friend she's going to be like student class president or something. She's a fifth grader. He's a kindergartner. We're in the same school. But we have a friend, you know, whose kid is, you know, whatever, just this absolute fantastic, precocious, wonderful. And she came to meet him, and she said, you know, I'll tell you what, you know, Kendra, I'm going to have my daughter meet, you know, Ezra at the gate, and she'll, you know, walk him in. And she did twice. And then, but she wasn't there today. And we just got to the gate. I'm not allowed to walk him in because of, you know, health, COVID safety stuff. And so it's okay. He's like, is she going to meet me at the gate? No, she's not going to meet you at the gate. You know, you're going to have to walk in. I can't go with you. You know where to go. He does know where to go. And I watched him as he walked, you know, 50 yards, you know, or something from me to where I couldn't see, out of my care, into some other situation on his own recognizance, and that's never happened. And it was so intense and profound to watch him walk into his relationship with the world. Just to watch him, you know, I didn't set him from my care into the hands of another adult. That's not what happened. He's gonna bring himself from my care to the hands of another adult. He went to go do that. And there's a gate up and there's a fence, and it's not like he could go the other way, you know.
For him, though, it might as well be.
I'm talking about me, but yes, right. Yes.
Yeah. No, I know.
Yes. Enough about his feelings. And he just, there's this feeling that I've had in my life that is so, I have a friend who just moved, and it was the first time they moved somewhere alone. And they, they're a good bit younger than me. But an adult woman, but it was the first time that she had moved someplace on her own recognizance, arranged for a place for herself to stay. And she's going to a city she doesn't know. And she doesn't have a job yet. She's going to look for it, and she's done her best to arrange things. It's so cool what you're walking into. You don't know. It's so cool. Like, you're setting yourself up for one of the great experiences that happens in this universe that's terrifying and awesome, of this sense of, like, it's aloneness, but it's this, like, magnificent, it's the splendor of this, that there are only two things. There's the universe, and then there's me. and that there's just like I am under, you know, I face this and here I am experiencing this thing before me in a way that only I experience through my eyes, and I will face and I will accept the challenge before me, and to just watch this unfold for my son. You know, maybe he's felt that way at other times, but I have never just sat and witnessed him. He's five, you know, five. He's this tiniest little squirt of a nothing, you know, walking. He just has to go face what's before him, fall forward, you know, in a controlled manner, you know.
Yeah, right, in a controlled manner. My five, you're like, son. Who knows?
Oh, my God. Oh, it's so
the
intense.
The closest thing recently for me is you know, 6 years, 7 years ago, five years ago with Isabella, 7 years ago with Sam, the driver's license, and just watching them drive away in a metal box.
God, it's a terrible idea.
Turning onto it and knowing that they're about to hit that particular.
Right.
Yeah, it's just so that was quite a thing to, you know, I don't know where my mind was at. I can't remember, but I know I felt a lot of fear and letting, I had to just let go, you know, and just bye, good, you know, and then your heart is just walking around outside of yourself your whole life. Having kids, there's this idea, my children are 23, 19, and there's this idea like, well, now the children are out of the house and but now I'm caring for my parents and for my wife's mother, and I'm and now they come home and I have to have their that feeling of them being in the world and me not being able to cover in any way is it doesn't go away.
It sounds like an emotional thing you're describing. My heart is walking around, you know, outside in the world.
Outside of myself.
But it's so physical. In the world. It's so physical, you know. It's just so, like, it just is true. It's not, you're not describing an emotional thing. You're describing a physical thing, you know.
But
and
it is definitely
and
emotional.
Of course it's fucking emotional. But
produces
my
emotions.
God, it just is true. It's just your actual flesh in heart. Walking naked, right, in through the world. It's the craziest
thing. And
then
I think it's crazy. And then the practices on love within the Buddhist tradition and on bodhicitta, the wish to become a fully happy, enlightened being for the sake of other human, yourself and others, for all. That feeling of being a parent begins to extend to a frog stuck somewhere or about to be eaten by that snake, that copperhead that's in our pond right in front of our house, and these frogs that get eaten, and or the crane comes and you don't know whether to protect the fish from the crane or you just any child, like how to burst out of the confined wisdom, generosity, heart opening of the parent. And then why would Christianity speak of God as a parent? Why did Lord Jesus Christ call out to the Father? Like, what's going on there? And why is it that, like, Thomas Aquinas begins his catechism with the whole of the spiritual life is faith in God to whom you find union as if betrothed, the way a woman and a husband, I like that, a man and a wife are betrothed, so are our souls betrothed to God in this act of faith. It's just like,
suppose you traveled to a galaxy crowded with billions on billions of pure paradises and took an infinite number of different offerings and sat forever presenting them always to suppose that every single day you three times went and made some offering of delectable food in 300 silver cups. The merit that you performed in this way would never equal even a fraction of the good you get from a moment, an instant of love.
What text is that from, Ben?
King of Concentration Sutra. That's Lord Buddha.
Oh goodness. And then the question is, and what is love? And know, what is it to love? And but this thing of we're feeling with our child, when I mention that, often the reaction is, who can do that? The feeling I have for Ezra, your son, the feeling you have for Ezra, the feeling I have for Samuel and for Isabella, No, that's not the point. You're not supposed to have that relationship with every moment and every reality and every projection and everything that we come into contact with. And I'm like, really? We're not? Like, who says?
I mean,
that's too much.
You're not, to say like, and I'm not saying that this was your sticking point, okay? I'm not putting words in your mouth, right? I'm refining
for my own brain. Let's look at it. I don't even know.
No,
I think people are probably right about it.
You're not supposed to. But it's possible that it's possible. And what is that interesting? You know, but what if...
Like, is it... Well, let's say this, Ben. Is it desirable? Is that even desirable? Do I want my heart outside of myself, every single thing that's outside?
Boy, that's a tough question. I was going to say yes, of course, and then you described the state, and I thought, no, of course.
In my heart, the limb, the tree, the brick, the person, the being, the this, the that, the my heart, the whole world is my Kala Chakra heart. The whole universe has become, is a reflection of myself.
I've always had this heart. Like cute kind of, you know, slightly arrogant idea that my, maybe it's not slight, that my heart is strong partially because of the way, or to some meaningful extent, by the way I've exposed it emotionally, and that you cannot hide your heart away and hope that your heart be strong. And I have tried to have an open heart in situations that put it at risk and even did injure it. And yet this is part of why my heart is strong. My heart is strong because I have taken these risks, but not my boy. Oh, not my boy. Not my, you know, that's too much.
Yeah.
You know, not my boy though. You know, to think like that, that's too much. You know, to think of that thought and to think of like magnifying that, that's too much though. But it's true. The same in theory would apply.
Isn't that why Moses can't look into God's face, into the essence of reality? Isn't that why the veil sits in Solomon's temple? Isn't that why? Because to look upon the love that holds us in being is to look upon the creator that is doing that very thing that we're like, no way. You mean God's heart is walking outside of God's creation is God's heart walking around outside of God's heart and also God. Yeah, I do. Yeah, that is right.
Yeah.
That sounds right. That sounds theologically pretty, pretty spot on with all the monotheisms I know.
And as a, you know, from a, yeah.
So God does
from
it.
A Buddhist perspective, you know, I mean, it's, yeah, wouldn't we be tempted? Haven't I felt tempted? Haven't I felt, you know, isn't there this temptation to veil ourselves from a reality which would reveal all beings to be but chambers of our own heart? And it would be too much. It would be
too, it would require too much of me.
It would be it would, I couldn't bear it. I can't. I'm not up to it. I need to and so I will not, if it is true, I'd rather not know it. And maybe it is true.
Yeah.
Can I please, Krishna, you know, go back to your regular, it's too much. The truth is too much. Please.
And so God sends God's offspring to feel that for all beings and die for all beings feeling that and resurrect for all beings within that notion. And then it is that Krishna, that Christ, that the bhakti experiences God doing the work in themselves.
But I still feel like as soon as I've set it down, as soon as I've seen it and I've balked and I've set it down and I don't have to look again, I can't help but feel like, but I want to see it again. And then I look and I don't want to see it again. And then I don't see it again, which is what I asked for. And then I long to see it again. the truth of the relationship between others and my own heart.
Yeah, and the truth of the relationship between God and all God's creatures. That's insane.
Yeah, and maybe that's an and. You know, right, this is this question on the table, right? Of course, you know, are we saying and, are we saying but, are we describing the same thing? And I don't know. I don't claim to know.
That's up to you and the listener and me.
I don't know if it is. We could think that and be wrong. But yeah, right. This is a question on the table.
And up to us. That'll come. I keep pushing in this mode over and over, and I don't usually do it in my daily life. I want to speak. I mean, it came out naturally, and it's amazing how natural some of the more intense, less acceptable Christian teachings are coming to light as we move in within these talks. And I recognize that it can be pretty challenging to some of the things but it is interesting how quickly or how easily my mind is going to Christian doctrine and dogma and truths that seem to deepen my Buddhist understanding, my 20 years in Buddhism. They don't. I'm not even looking for ecumenical dovetailing or something. I'm not even in the pursuit of let me just examine this, because I know you said before. It did, but the notion of all the paths going to the summit, it's more how do you describe the summit, and how do you describe the absolute? It's more in praise of the mystery that we're all bowing to, whether it's something we call God or something we call love or ultimate truth. The interest, the ecumenical heart, the Catholic heart, the universal heart, it's not wondering to me whether all the paths, this is recent, okay? I'm just throwing this out, but it's been like a month of it and I haven't mentioned it, and I've been cooking it for a while. It's, you fall in love with the process we were talking about, that refinement and this love of truth. And then you want so desperately to hear everybody's version of the summit, everybody's version of the ideal, everybody's way of talking about the impossibility of talking about the idea. You want to like absorb potentially, and it not so much to see whether they go to the same place, but to see that each way and each time period and each generation has this insatiable longing. And in that, there's communion. We don't even have to agree about the nature of what we're longing for. We don't. We can, yet what is this thing that is placed in the human heart that longs? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What is it, Ben? Why do we long? Mm-hmm. Who put that there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why?
Right. And that.
Bro.
And that, I don't know.
Why do you have it so strong? Why do you have it so strong? Where did you get that? You didn't make that happen.
Oh. I don't know if that's true. That, I mean, I listen, if you want to say it's a mystery, I'm with you. If you want to make statements about how I did,
if you're going to go and say I didn't make it happen,
I don't know.
You can go like, you know, just kidding.
I don't know that
kidding.
I did. I don't know.
No, I know. It's a better, I know.
You know,
it's not clear to me. Either.
And I again, like my drive for the ecumenical, if what Ben Kramer does is driving for the ecumenical, you know, like it's not, it wouldn't be apparent to a lot of people who think they're ecumenical, but I don't have the same tools as everybody, but I want to give access to these tools, you know, like I want to be able to avail myself of a path to heaven, but I don't necessarily have the same tools. I don't have the same faith in God. I don't have the same sense in that way. So am I out, you know, on my tuchus
Hell no.
That's what I suspect as well, but I don't, and I also don't know that, you know.
Oh, yeah, well, for me it would be, I'd be out on my tuchus for sure. But that's
I don't
just
know me. That that's sure. And again,
no, I know you don't know. Yeah. I know that you don't know. Well, I know you think I can't know. But for me, I know. I'm out of, without faith in God. Kill me now. Shoot me. Seriously. I'd rather not live. Seriously. And for me, there's no...
That bothers me so much. I don't say that. Don't say that. It's too much.
Oh, for me, why?
I hear you because
but I feel
I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Because anyone else who thought that, I beg them to live. There's another moment and there's still hope. It's okay. Because tomorrow you could wake up and you ate something weird and something happened and you don't have it. And we're all counting on you to be here because I don't know what tomorrow brings. And I can't, and I can't wrap my mind around a version of reality because I can't help it. But I can't help but not be able to wrap my mind around a version of reality in which you can't know how you will feel tomorrow. And I still need you here, no matter what you think. And if you wake up tomorrow without faith in God, it may come the next day. It may not come the next day. And in either case, I need you. And so I just, well, and I don't like you thing. I don't feel comfortable
perhaps
with you
it's
thing.
Not,
I need you. And I don't feel comfortable.
Right. And I and perhaps I stated it too strongly.
That's all I'm saying.
I don't
say that. Because I need you.
The faith has, it's not, I guess I, it's a little, it's not, the word isn't rhetorical, but my life is faith in God. It's not like it could, it's not something that can be taken because it's not something I have. It's something I am. I don't know how to, it's so,
you know, there are stories of bodhisattvas, right? And who have reached a state in which their mind is the wish to achieve enlightenment, right? The main mind, and have lost it, you know? And if you, you know, you cannot think, I mean, and I don't know doctrine like you know doctrine, but I suspect there are stories in your tradition, right? Of these crises where a person wakes up as if they suddenly don't have it and can't help but feel that they don't even after they did. And God bless if it returns to them. And I just don't know. And I can't, well, you can say, you know, what you can't help but know, but if I can't help but not know it, it's a very fraught way to communicate with us who don't have that sort of knowledge. It's good. Listen, it's fine to send these messages. It is your heart. And I do want to know your heart. And I do want to share that. And I don't want to cut you off from that. But I also,
you know, I appreciate you pulling me back from an exaggeration or a precipice of some sort.
People are so delicate.
I do.
People are
I do.
So
I
sensitive.
Did feel it. I feel it. I did feel it. I do feel it burn in me. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't think that's something one should say too much.
No.
But can't help but feel it. Or at least I could say, if I lost said faith, if I were to lose it, I would be in the depths of a despair and an abyss in which I might find something deeper because I would use reason in that moment. Mm. And reason would tell me this. You have vows not to take yourself out. You have vows. You understand a little bit about the karma of hurting yourself or taking your own. And it's taught in every... So I don't feel like my tradition... I don't think I can say... I mean, Christ is the way for me. It doesn't mean that the Christian tradition... I feel like the traditions are all informing my understanding of Christ. So for me, the ecumenicism is take, because I practiced Islam, you know, with a Sufi sheikh, and I practiced Hatha Yoga with a person who was made a Swami and came over to New York. And I practiced Buddhism with a Lama like you, and I practiced Christianity with this thing, and I studied with a rabbis about the Torah. And I feel like all those traditions, to be frank, are my human traditions. They have all been bequeathed to me. They are all ways of pursuing ultimate love and truth. And they've blown my mind. And so I don't, while Christ is the portal for me, I need all of those traditions. Catholic means universal. And I just can't understand how anybody could enter into a tradition that is looking for something universal and ultimate and not wish to be transformed by other people's notions of the ultimate and challenged. I don't understand how that couldn't be the act of a Pharisee. I'm in catechism on Sunday. I'm in my second catechism class. I'm going through an 8-month training called Roman Catholic Initiation for Adults to enter into the Roman Catholic Church formally. And already there's some red flags, not the problem with the Catholic tradition, but with the way it's being shared. And I feel like the and I hate using this word. Excuse me, I don't like using this word. But Pharisee, not in the terms of the Jewish tribe or the Israelite tribe Pharisee and that beautiful tribe that kept the law in the world and kept it protected until we could have a more open law. I believe there was a formation of humanity through specifically that sect. Very important. So I don't, but the mindset as it's shared in the New Testament, in the gospel is like, look, if you sit there and say, I have the goods, you know, and I understand I'm at catechism and the teacher's saying, you know, this is the true faith. And I'm just like the true faith. Mm-hmm. Can we analyze those three words? Mm-hmm. The article, the, mm-hmm. and the word true. Yes. And the word faith, right. Because of course there's a way in which you have to be like, okay, I'm doing this thing. I'm going to really, but that would never, it feels like it other makes, it feels like a Pharisee moment to me. I can't help but see Phariseeism as the church understands it being practiced within the very place that is supposed to be stopping it. So I'm really with you, man. When I don't feel like I'm in the Christian tradition.
And we live in a society, okay, that often teaches us to be cynical, alarmed, right, about the word faith.
Yeah,
and that
for good reason.
Yeah, dude, totally.
Like, hello.
Right. Right. So I feel like there's a very cool conversation to be had, which reveals to those who are most loath to speak that word, the places in their life where they already depend on it, whether they've noticed
Lovely.
It or not.
Well said.
But I just, boy, do I want to walk up to that line furtively and so cautiously. And not, you know, again, I'm not worried per se about the, you know, the 1.5 people listening right now. It's also me, right? It's also my own struggles with that, where I've placed faith that it worked for me and where I've placed faith that it didn't work for me is faith the problem? I mean, we have to get on to, you know, this will probably require a multi-decade discussion about what that word means.
Multi-decade discussion. Amen. May it be so.
Yeah, I better go. I love you, dude. Thank you so much for spending time with me today.
Wow, that was so sudden.
I know. I'm sorry to do that to you, but it's literally true.
And I'm sorry if I missed. I didn't feel that
beautiful.
Coming.
I know.
No, you didn't.
I just know what time it is, and I know I'm in trouble if I don't go and do things. I have 73 more things I want to say on the subject, so I'm allowing myself decades to do it.
Well, I have 73 more things I want to listen to as well.
Thank you.
So it works out. And yeah, bro.
Cool. I love you, too. I'll talk to you very soon.